Hello, I'm Kenny Linden with Radio Free Palmer, and joining me in the studio today is Republican candidate for Alaska Senate District F, Adam Crum. Welcome, and thank you for joining us today. Oh,
thank you for having me today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. So our theme for our questions today are the more things change, the faster they change. So we'll go ahead and dive into our first question. In Alaska, some Native elders are saying our traditional knowledge is no longer reliable. Describe how you think this observation applies to politics in Alaska.
It's a good question, because in Alaska, being such a young state, politically, our traditional knowledge has changed quite a bit. Particularly when you look at the last 12 to 15 years of what we've done, I'd say that our traditional knowledge doesn't really apply anymore either when it comes to the political side, because we've dug ourselves into this hole with no diversification. We've relied on a single revenue stream. And we need to actually change the way we look at this, and we have to challenge traditional models on how we fund certain things and what we look at and actually define vital services.
Do you have a perspective of what sort of vital services that you want to define, or talk about diversification of funding as well?
Well, I know that one of the things is, because that term vital services got kicked around and no one took the time to actually define what it meant this whole session. I know that constitutionally we have to take care of the most vulnerable of our populations, and to me, that's children and seniors. Outside of that, we have to actually look at, there's a difference between a want and a need. What do we actually have to do? And I think that is the big burden of what we have to do this next session of the upcoming legislature. We have to define what our vital services are, and then we can start looking at where we can do reductions, but still maintain those critical aspects that we have to provide. And it's very difficult to do, but I don't think they've even addressed the question.
Mm. And they, meaning the legislature.
Yeah.
And when it comes to how we go about defining those, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on how you, if you were to be elected, how you would respond to constituents that are advocating for specific funding streams for education or for especially we've looked at early childhood education, senior services. You said seniors and children are considered constitutionally some of these vital services. So do you have an idea of how you would start to look at those in a hierarchical way, or how you would sort out what needs to be funded and what go by the wayside?
What we have to do is, I would say, you see zero-based budgeting and people get all nervous, but I'd say you would kind of use that approach. We would look at, okay, what do kids need? What do seniors need? And then those are the top two priorities we have to ensure. Outside of that, we then move along further. Edmund Burke was a British parliamentarian, and he actually, talking about a representative republic or democracy, said you have to be elected by your people, and then you have to follow what you know. You're elected for a reason, and you go, because we're not a simple majority democracy. And so that's the thing that we have to look at. You have to represent your constituents, and their certain needs, and we have to look at what we actually have to do. I know that in Alaska, we've got to look across the board, and it's going to hurt all the way across. We have this mentality here that you can't touch education. My mom was a school teacher for over 30 years, and so I understand the pain the teachers have, to where she was spending more money out of her own pocket than she had for classroom budget to provide that education level, and the sacrifice teachers do. But it's one of those things, we have to ensure that the most money that we're spending on education is actually getting to the kids. How much are we wasting on administration and bureaucracies, and how much is that money being funneled through? So we have to look at everything across the board. And it's one of those, I'd say, from a leadership perspective, we're going to hurt everywhere. Everybody's going to have to give their pound of flesh on this, because we're going to have to do straight cuts all the way across, because we can't just eliminate entire sectors, but everybody is going to have to feel the pinch for a little bit while we can right-size ourselves and gain efficiencies. This is an opportunity for us to put ourselves on a corrective path for the future.
Along those lines, you talked about diversification of funding. Mm-hmm. Could you speak to that a little bit?
We are an incredibly resource-rich state. Under our statehood compact and under ANILCA, a lot of promises were made by the federal government about access to our lands, and some of those have not been fulfilled. One of those being is mineral and resource development. It's one of those, we like hunting and fishing and living in Alaska and enjoying the outdoors, but it's always the not-in-my-backyard mentality when it comes to mining. But those are things that we like our technology. We have to find ways to responsibly develop our resources and diversify out. We have 17% of the world's coal. That's kind of a dirty word right now when it comes to it. But my background is that my master's is in public health. So I've done chemical and risk analysis and I do air quality sampling. And I've seen and taken tours all over the country, different facilities. And there are means of doing this to actually maintain your carbon footprint and actually do things efficiently. And also you have to weigh the goods and the bads. You know, how much does it cost to export fuel and other things to remote areas as opposed to developing a local source there? And so we have to look at all of this stuff, but we've got a lot of resources in Alaska and we have to manage those resources against each other, right? You don't want to do one development against and kind of kill an entire resource on its own. So we have the state, though, we can branch out and do things like that.
Great. Thank you. Moving on to our second question. In your life to date, how have you managed adapting to change?
Change is one of those things that's inevitable. The easiest way to survive change is to know who you are. To have this, I like this word called certitude. It's freedom of doubt in one's own opinion and beliefs. And so it's a level of security that you have. So when you go and you're seen and forced upon, and when change is forced upon you, you have this core that you know who you are and you know how you're going to stand up to it. And for me, that's putting my head down and working. I grew up in Anchor Point, had the opportunity to go play football in the Big Ten in Chicago. Landed in Chicago, and that's a big city. All these big, giant guys walking around. My mom dropped me off at the dorm. She said, Adam, are you sure you want to do this? And I'm like, yeah, thanks, Mom, for that. Nice little boost of confidence. But put my head down and just continue to work and grind it out. And ended up starting for 2 years, you know, small town kid from Alaska. But it just took effort. And the lot change is hard, but you have to just do what you know. And for me, that is putting your head down, doing research, studying, and hard work.
How would you bring that idea of certitude to the legislature? How would you apply to working with your colleagues?
And that's an added benefit from what I have is the fact, because I am secure, I know who I am, I know what I can do. And that thing, I'm a businessman. The good thing about being a businessman is you're smart enough to hire smarter people than you and or to listen to smarter people. And so we have to work with, you can't pick and choose your clients. And so you have to work with everybody. You have to work with different groups, different agencies, different agendas. But you have to look through and cut and see what is the core purpose of what we're here. What are we trying to achieve? And so we're going to have to work together. This is not R's and D's down there. This is Alaskans. And right now we have an opportunity to actually put Alaska on a correct course for the future. And we have to do this. And that's going to require reaching back and forth across. And that's one of those I'm very comfortable addressing and talking with anyone.
And I think that segues really nicely into our next question. If you consider yourself a conservative, describe the best qualities and achievements of liberals with whom you've worked or vice versa.
I would say that I am a conservative, but, you know, the liberals, the things like that is, I would say their empathy, the people I've worked with and their ability and capacity to care and serve others. And I think that's something that we can learn from and it's something that needs to be embraced. And so you have to have different perspectives in this world. We're not all going to fit into the same nice little neat tidy box. It's okay for other people to have different opinions. It's okay to disagree. But I think you need to look towards what is good about that person. What is their beliefs? And, you know, what is valuable to you that you can take? And I'd say those, you know, the empathy and the willing to serve are the two good things I've noticed amongst people I've worked with.
Do you have a lot of experience working with people from diverse political backgrounds?
Oh, absolutely. So in our company, being a vocational training school, I've got to travel all across Alaska. I've been to almost every Arctic village. I've been up down most of Western Alaska. I've flown on the Cessnas holding other people's babies because there wasn't room in the back. And so we have to work with native groups and state agencies and large companies and very extensive background of working with people of different backgrounds and beliefs. But you find what that common goal is we're trying to achieve and you work towards that. And so, yeah, that's, I feel very comfortable in that regard.
How do you think that perspective will lend itself to working with other legislators from around the state?
Oh, I think that'll help tremendously. I've seen a lot of their backyards, so you understand a lot of what's going on with the different areas. Growing up on the Kenai Peninsula is different than living in the Mat-Su. It's different than living in Anchorage versus the interior versus Western Alaska versus even Arctic Alaska. We've got different issues and concerns that we're all bringing to the table. And this is something that just kind of having that openness of understanding where we're coming from, it kind of it puts me a couple steps forward in reaching out and understanding where our positions are.
Great. Moving on to our next question. As a candidate for the state legislature, do you believe that the way people's business is conducted needs to change? If so, describe a specific way that change can be achieved.
I'd say yes. The way we've gone about business, the way we lived in Alaska is going to change. We've enjoyed for a number of years now not paying state taxes, no sales tax, things like that. And so one of those is once we have to right size government, but this is in the future, we're going to all have to look at how we chip in. Or is my road not going to be plowed within the first day? It's going to take 3 days to get there because we're cutting back on services. And so we're all going to have to make these sacrifices. And on a personal level, we're going to have to amend how we do business. But the beauty about being in Alaska is most of the people up here, you're up here because of you have this kind of pioneer, like frontier sense. And so that's why I love living up here. I'm second generation. My dad was born in the territory of Alaska. And you look at all the things we've done between the railroad days and then the pipeline and all of this exploration around the state. We have this mentality, so we can change. And you just have to, you know what, everybody? We're all going to have to pick it up. We all want to stay here, maintain a quality of life. So we're going to have to adjust that a little bit so we can actually prepare ourselves for the future.
You mentioned taxes as part of that. Is that something that you are interested in?
Not now. In the immediate, no, we cannot do this because what I believe...
No to increasing taxes
no
or adding taxes?
No to increasing taxes. I think what we've done is we've had too many tax changes in the last decade. And so that is actually starting to scare off business. Now, I'm not saying you have to give sweetheart deals and credit packages all the time, but what we can do is just have a stable economic background so we can actually encourage people to come in and invest. And that's where I believe the private sector can come in and take care of that. So we were built on that. And so taxes is a long-term play if we can't get any other revenue streams coming. But in the immediate future, I don't want new taxes because I believe if we get those little things now, what's going to do is the will to reduce the size of government is going to be greatly diminished.
When you talk about the private sector mm-hmm. being able to step into that, what are you envisioning?
You look at things, for example, I some ways we can actually get the government out of the way in order to allow people to invest. One of those is the certificate of need process. Alaska Regional Hospital is a for-profit company. They try building an emergency care facility in Eagle River under the certificate of need, which is a state-run process. Providence argued that, and they were determined, no, we can't build a bed there. And so now all of a sudden, Eagle River is this underserved population with no hospital or emergency care, and a company was denied the ability to invest. And this is something they'd build a facility, they'd pay property taxes, and those are economic drivers right there, just because the government was in the way.
Do you see that in your own work? You said that you work in industrial mm-hmm. training. Do you see that as an opportunity within the industrial side of the private sector or?
What we can do as a state is the state has to maintain property rights and has to ensure things are done correctly. But as it is now, the process has gotten much too long. Yes or no answers are taking years, sometimes up to 7 years now for even getting environmental impact statements back, as opposed to a quick process. Even a year or two is much better than we're at now. And what these yes or no answers can come back on is it'll allow companies who are willing to invest and do those preemptive studies. Because it's getting right now to where it's so much money just to sit and wait to hopefully do something that we are looking very unattractive towards investment on anything. Whether that comes to infrastructure, roads, any resource development anywhere, even building of houses in the Anchorage Bowl is very difficult to do now.
Great. Thank you. Moving on to our next question. Describe your prediction about the makeup of the next legislature. Explain your reasoning and the probability that you will be right.
Well, I think if I could actually predict that, then I should be investing, and I don't think I'd be here right now. That is going to be a good question. I believe the Senate will probably maintain a Republican majority. I have no idea what is going to happen in the House. With so many seats up for grabs and with a lot of viable challengers stepping up to run against incumbents in multiple seats all over the place, I really don't know what is going to happen. What I do know is we all have to get together. I don't believe we had very good messaging this last session. To where understanding we all have to pull together. And I think that's regardless of who is in charge, we all have to understand, you know what? We all live here. We all want to stay here. We all have to do something to move forward. And we can't have this gridlock process and this very dogmatic foxhole approach.
Hmm. Do you think that's part of the caucus approach where we, like you spoke to the Senate maintaining a Republican majority mm-hmm. that at the moment there's a supermajority within the Senate? Are you envisioning more of a bipartisan process or moving away from this very, I guess, voting in step with what the caucus is?
Yeah, regimented, singular mm-hmm. focus type stuff. You know, I don't know if you call it bipartisan or what are the other phrases for that, because that kind of has a negative connotation amongst certain groups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really good. What we actually have to do with this caucus approach is we have to have people that are willing to do this. The problem is if it's a black and white, you're either with us or you're against us, is you lose a lot of momentum and you actually silence a lot of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You lose that ability to speak up and or address certain concerns. And I think that's one of those that we really have to touch. You know, it's there's the election process and then there's selection amongst your peers.
Mm-hmm.
And these are things that come together when you do this organization part. And just to let it be known, a lot of the people that are looking to run, he's like, you know what, we've got some base things that we want to accomplish. For me, I want long-term planning for the state. Running businesses, you know, 3 years is a very short, long outlook. But for the government, that's exceptionally long. You know, Governor Tony Knowles at the end of his term actually got everyone to agree to no increased spending over 5 years. And we actually managed to hold this. These are things that we can do as a state. It can be done. We have a history of it in Alaska. And this is something that we really need to look at. But it's going to take people willing to step up and do that.
Along those lines, could you speak to why you chose to run for Senate? I know this is a seat that's been held by mm-hmm. Senator Stoltz for a long time, who's been in the legislature for a long time. So speak to why this is important to you.
I've gotten to know Senator Stoltz very well. He is someone who is just a true community-involved person. And so we do a lot of work with the Mat-Su Miners with our company. We donate a lot of time and services. And anytime there'd be an emergency or something, a water line burst, we'd be out there with equipment. And then Senator Stoltz would be there with a shovel as well. And so you really got to see his heart of that. And so that kind of inspired you to look at, you know, you can be in the public sector and still be a real person. And that was one of the things I appreciated most about him. And when he kind of took us by surprise, when he announced his retirement, and you know, looking around of, you know, some of the other options of people stepping up to run, and I just wasn't satisfied. I didn't think that some of the other people running, I didn't want them to be my senator. I think that I can bring a lot more to the table with a different background. Being born, raised up here, working here, have invested locally, hired locally, and been politically active on both the state and federal level, you can see a little bit how this works. And you also get a little frustrated about how slow it works. And while there's a certain pace that is necessary to have in government, you also have to have those different perspectives as well. And right now we've got too many people that grew up as aides down there or step their way up through every little political level, as opposed to having to make different decisions like payroll and hiring and layoffs and business planning. And I think that's just a different skill set that I can bring down there. I've also had to manage a lot of people, negotiate a lot of contracts, and work with a lot of people. And so this is something that I can bring and I think is a good skill set to have down there.
Do you think it's also part of this outsider mentality versus an incumbent mentality?
A little bit. I think Bernie and Trump have really kind of kicked up the dust a little bit when it comes to a little bit of anti-incumbent sentiment. Because you really look at it, and it doesn't matter what your perspective is, you know what? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting the same results, the definition of insanity. And we have to change what we're doing. And so this is something that, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe that did get to me a little bit. But it's also, you get to the point, too, to where it's not enough to sit back and complain. You actually have to do something yourself. And so it's time to roll your sleeves up and go to work.
Great. Moving on to our next question. The discussion about the budget has taken up most of the current legislative session. If further cuts in expenditures are to be done, describe specifically what those cuts should be and also what impact the cuts will have. If additional revenues are to be added, also specifically describe them and their impact.
Okay.
Cuts, big question.
Big question. Cuts across the board. We have to look at that. And in order, how we do this, you know, the two elephants in the room are education and healthcare. So we have the highest per capita or per student spend on education in the nation, according to a study from 2013, fiscal year 2013. It was $26,000 a student, whereas no other state broke $20,000 ahead. We also are in the lower tier when it comes to education performance. Now, this is where we really have to look at what is going to work. Alaska is a different state. We can't take the exact same model that is used in, say, King County down in Seattle area and use that for every part of Alaska. We've got different areas. We've got different groups. And so these traditional models, we're going to have to really look at, because you know what? It's not working. And throwing money after the problem is not going to work either. And so we really do have to adjust what we're doing. We have to look at what models are being used in Alaska that are successful. And we do have a good number of them between various homeschool programs, not all of them, but some of them are very good, a couple of the charters, and then there are some that have variable link training programs like the Chugach School District. These are models that we can look at. We can adjust some of our formula and statutory funding rules and look at how we have to fund these processes. When it comes to the healthcare side, that's a sticky issue when it comes to it, because there's so many people on it, and that cost is just going to grow and grow and grow. So we really have to look at where our formula is and which ones, what groups have we agreed to take care of and to pay for, and which ones can we adjust moving forward. And so there's a lot of definitions, and it's going to be a lot of work there. When it comes to different government agencies, you know, I do believe we probably have too many staff on board. We had so much money coming in for years that we've grown and created bureaucracies. And so not all of them are always viable and efficient. And just like a wildfire is natural in nature and it's good and it creates a regrowth and it's healthy, that's sometimes what we're going to have to do in the public sector as well. Private sector, we've been doing it the last 2 years. We've had to do a lot of cuts, and you know what? There's still a lot of companies surviving, but we all had to trim. We all had to gain efficiencies.
With the education piece, again, since you mentioned like charter schools and things, most charter schools are funded through public education dollars. Were you referring to like the voucher system that Senator Mike Dunleavy has proposed in the past?
You know, that's a possible option too. I do believe in parental choice in education, but it's also what models are used and what are the most successful. And, you know, one of those could be all of the standardized testing aspects. I actually had a group meeting last night in a neighborhood, and I was meeting and talking with a couple teachers, and they were lamenting to the level of effort they have to put in just for a couple standardized tests, that they have to put curriculums on hold. And you look at transparency of costs, how much does that cost per student? Are we wasting time on that? And so there's some things there that we can look at. But yeah, there are some schools that are better, different models that work. And perhaps those can be, you know, extrapolated or moved to other areas.
Great. And then our last question, what do you think is more important, voting based on your constituents' concerns or your own conscience? For example, if your constituents were to overwhelmingly support an income tax, but you personally oppose one, how would you vote and how would you explain your decision to your constituents?
Well, that's easy. The way that's written is if I have definitive knowledge that 100% that my overwhelming majority of my constituents believe one thing, that's my job to represent that. You're going to hear differing concerns and groups from all your constituents. If you have a method of actually finding out all of what your constituents want, please share that with me, because that would be a great tool to have as a legislator. I do believe, though, that we are elected for a certain reason to go down and lead based on your ideas and based on your capabilities. And that's the benefit of our processes, too, is if someone doesn't do things like, you have the ability to actually, you know, vote them out and change that. But as we move forward, this is going to be a lot of very tough, painful, unpopular decisions are going to have to be made in the next couple of years as we prep Alaska for health. We do have cash on hand. We are hemorrhaging through our savings, and there's no need for us to. We have certain plans we can have. We have projects we can attack, and we have efficiencies that can be gained through looking at just simple traditional model challenge.
Along those lines, with method of contacting constituents, since our legislature meets primarily in Juneau, except for we've had some special sessions over the last couple of years in Anchorage, how do you have thoughts on how you would keep in contact with Valley constituents?
About being public and coming back. And this is one of those, we've got some great examples of that with our Valley legislators, but how they come back and maintain and engage. They have certain groups with Facebook, with email. There's newsletters and things that you can actually do to maintain that contact. I know that, you know, we've some of the, like Senator, or I'm sorry, Representative Tilton has been very good about trimming her staff size. And so she still has been able to maintain and respond back to people when they send questions and concerns. And so those are good examples of what we can do. And it's you have to maintain back and forth. You have to be there for the floor session votes. But if you have an opportunity to come home in the middle to actually get your bearings and meet the people who elected you to represent you, I think that's a very good thing to do. It keeps you grounded, and it reminds you of why you're doing what you're doing. C.S. Lewis has this great essay on the inner ring about the allure of being pulled in. But if you keep in mind the purpose of what you're doing and you're a sound craftsman, that'll keep you strong.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us here in the studio today. Again, this is Adam Crum, who is running for the Alaska Senate District F seat and is a Republican candidate. And we'll be hearing more from him, I'm sure, leading up to the primary. So thank you so much.
Hey, thank you guys very much for having me.